From KBIA News in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. Homelessness has been on the rise in Columbia in recent years, so we're talking about what local organizations are doing to address the issue. Our guests are Nick Foster, the Executive Director of the Voluntary Action Center, Meg Hegeman of the Wilkes Boulevard United Methodist Church, and Sid and Patricia Howard of the church's Turning Point program. This is the second of two shows Intersection is producing on the growing issue of homelessness in Columbia and new energy among local organizations to address it. You can listen to our first show on homelessness on the Intersection program page on kbia.org. Here's Nick Foster, Executive Director of the Voluntary Action Center.
What resources are there for people who are chronically homeless in Columbia now? Where can they go? What help can they get?
Well, there are a few agencies that are addressing homelessness in a pretty direct way. We're one of those. We have a certain amount of money that we receive from HUD and from FEMA that we address the issue with. So people can come to us if they are either at risk of losing their home. In that case, we have funds that help with what we call homelessness prevention. Or if they're literally homeless, they're couch surfing, as we say, or they're living in their car, or they're out on the street, we have other funds, and we use that to move people into housing. That's called rapid rehousing. So really, those are the two primary ways that happens for us. There are other agencies in the community who have similar funding for similar programming. And then you've got ongoing housing services that are provided by the Columbia Housing Authority, of course, and they do a great job in a broad range of housing options for folks.
Affordable housing is a really big issue in Columbia now. Mm-hmm. When you go to rapidly rehouse someone, are you able to find enough space
If I were to say there is one issue, and you know, I said that this is really hard to say because it is a very complicated thing, but if I were to point to one thing in particular that I would love to see addressed in our community, it would be that there would be more affordable housing. One of the major hurdles that our clients face when they qualify for services, they have gone through all the paperwork, we've met with them multiple times, the hardest hurdle to get over is finding a place that will be affordable for them in an ongoing fashion. Mm-hmm. So that really is a big issue for us, and I think it's one thing that the city is trying to address in some creative ways and bringing some funding to bear on that. But I would love to see others find a way. Private developers, I would love to see private developers find a way to get into this market and provide that kind of housing for the folks that we serve and others.
And what would you consider to be affordable housing? Like, what would the rental rate be?
Yeah, I wish I could give you that verbatim, but I can't. The HUD has rent reasonableness guidelines that we have to meet. So mm-hmm. if someone comes in and they found a unit, they can move in and it falls within the parameters of rent reasonableness, then we can do that. So there are specific guidelines for that.
And it's interesting that you mentioned homeless people couch surfing or, you know, living in cars. I think a lot of people, and sometimes I do this too, when we think of homeless people, we think of people who are either on the streets or in a shelter. But
right.
there are a lot of people who are not exactly in that situation, but you could still say are homeless.
Yeah, and they are homeless by definition if they don't have a permanent residence and they're not able to stay there in an ongoing fashion. And again, HUD has particular guidelines about what qualifies there. And I think that one of the things that a lot of people have trouble with is realizing that this is actually true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see the folks on the street, we see the folks who maybe ask for a handout or obviously are just kind of hanging out for a while and have what appear to be all of their possessions with them on the street corner. But there are varieties of homelessness. I spoke with a gentleman just yesterday who is homeless, but not necessarily in an ongoing fashion. He, from time to time, will have a place, but a lot of times he sleeps in his car, and he has a job. You know, he's working,
mm-hmm.
and one of the major issues for him is being able to get to work, to get a shower, and do all the things. But he doesn't have a place over his. He doesn't have a roof over his head. This really exists. There are people who are living in their cars. There are people who are living in the woods. And for a lot I think, again, a lot of people in the community think, well, why do they choose to do that? Well, there might be a few folks who choose that, but not many. This is not anyone's choice, or for very few would it be their choice. They're just doing the best they can with what they have in the moment.
And in terms of places to sleep, I know that there's room at the inn for the winter months, mm-hmm. and then there are some other shelters where people can sleep around town. Which, can you describe which those are to me?
Well, I can't. I probably have a hard time off the top of my head, but you've got Harbor House that provides through the Salvation Army, St. Francis House, which provides for men, and there are a number of a few other shelters. But as I said, this is a complicated matter, and I think those of us who are involved in it on a regular basis recognize that this is another need. We do not have enough not permanent beds, but transitional beds for folks. And that's true for men. It's especially true for families, by the way, but also true for young people. Rainbow House does a great job, but they're limited as what they have available for young people. So we do have a need for more beds. Everybody's pretty much full most all the time. A lot of times when we have a client come to us, we'll call the shelter. If they're homeless, we'll call and say, do you have anything available? And I think really our anticipation is that most of the time they're going to say no.
And in that situation, do you look for rapid rehousing, like in a home? Or?
Well, getting rapid rehousing, getting rental assistance from us is not something that happens really quickly because there's a lot of paperwork to do. You have to find a unit in which to live, and if you don't have one yet, you've got to search for one. So it can take weeks and even months for that to happen. And in the meantime, those folks are doing what they've been doing up until that point. We do a certain amount of motel assistance, but we can't just open that. That motel assistance is very limited. It's only for people who have some place to go, essentially. If we were to offer motel assistance to anyone who might like a motel overnight, well, we'd be out of money
really
today.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty limited. So it can't happen quickly is basically what I'm saying, or very, very seldom is it going to happen that way.
As you said before, this is sort of an incredibly complicated question, but if you had a magic wand and unlimited funds and you could do one thing, create one structure, one resource for Columbia, what would it be?
Okay, so three things come to mind.
Go ahead.
One is affordable housing, that we would just have more affordable housing available. Two would be that we would have more beds in shelters that are temporary shelters, to be sure, but longer-term transitional beds and shelters. And the third would be the day center. I think that when it comes to having a hub for activity, there's nothing more vital than that. And one of the reasons is that it helps a lot of people who are homeless to gain some amount of stability. They can wash their clothes there. They can get on a computer and look for a job. They can take a shower. They can meet with folks from agencies who have resources to bring to them. So a lot of outreach can happen in that place. So I do think that if I were going to say one thing right now, I would say a functioning, long-term, settled day center.
And we know that Wilkes Church has a day center that they're running Turning Point, but that was only meant to be sort of a stopgap as the former day center moved out of a housing authority property,
right?
Which you were just telling me. And then there was the North 8th Street lot plan. The city purchased the lot and some organizations weren't going to build a day center there. And then the community was just sort of burdened and felt sort of that wasn't the right thing for the community. Where do plans for a day center now? I know there's a call for proposals from the city.
Right. Well, the city, I think, has made this a priority, and I'm grateful for that. It's just a matter – it seems the single biggest barrier to that happening is a location, a place for it. SoCatch is working on that and I think is doing some effective work there, not quite there, but maybe right on the cusp of that happening. And I'm hopeful about that. But that really is the key. I think that if we can identify the place, then I think the services can fall into place. But you've got to have a location for that. And I want to say something about Turning Point, too. They've done an outstanding job. It's an amazing job, actually. And I think in a lot of ways, what Meg and the others who've been working there have done is they've provided a template, really, for what will need to happen in a day center in an ongoing fashion.
That was Nick Foster of the Voluntary Action Center. Turning Point, which Nick mentioned, is a program at Wilkes Boulevard United Methodist Church in North Central Columbia. Pastor Meg Hegeman led the church as it opened a day center for the homeless in 2014. Here's Meg.
What happens at Turning Point? How many people come there? What services are available?
In the first quarter of this year, we saw over 500 unique individuals.
Wow.
And we average about 70 per day. In the winter, that was higher. We were up to 77. So every day people come in, they check their mail. They can do one load of laundry a week. They get a shower. They charge their cell phones. They get a cup of coffee, and they store their personal belongings with us, so they'll get whatever they need for the day. And then a lot of folks will prepare for their day. So if they need to get to Social Security office, or if they're planning on different job interviews that day, whatever their needs are, and if they're not sure what their needs are, we have volunteers who can sit down with them and talk them through what resources are available and where they need to go to find different resources.
And it's amazing when you think of the things that everybody takes for granted, like being able to charge your cell phone or take a shower. And these are things that are not available to people who don't have a home.
Absolutely. Even things as basic as using a restroom, honestly, there's not a whole lot of public restrooms in Columbia. So folks come to just really just meet their basic human needs, and they're able to have a greater sense of dignity and are more welcome throughout the community when they have clean clothes and they've been able to shower and they carry themselves with some self-respect.
Who is coming to Turning Point? Is there, you know, are there a lot of young people or a lot of older people or a lot of people maybe dealing with some mental illness issues or with substance abuse? Or is there any one thing that we can say, or probably not, but are there any factors that are prevalent?
The only constant is that everyone has a different story.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of folks that we serve are, and the only age demographics we keep are like under 18, over 60, and everybody falls in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have maybe a handful of folks who are over 60 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a great while, we'll have somebody under 18. Most of the time, they'll come in with a parent. We do have some who are like under 24. We do referrals to Youth Empowerment Zone and Rainbow House that have other resources for those folks. So sometimes we will have some younger people, but the vast majority of people are between 20 and 40, really. And partly that's because life on the streets is hard, so life expectancy is not what it is. It wouldn't be the same as for middle-class folk. Definitely we have folks who struggle with mental health. What I find interesting about that, though, is that whether or not mental health is the cause of someone losing their home, if you've lived on the streets for any amount of time, you're going to develop some difficulties mentally. PTSD is pretty rampant. It's a very, if you look at the types of torture, frankly, that are used in like military settings, sleep deprivation, constant exposure to light, noise, sense of not being safe, that's exactly what people on the street experience every day. So to expect that you wouldn't have some sort of mental reaction to that is just kind of crazy. So yes, there is a fair amount of mental health, and we do a lot of referrals to agencies that provide assistance with that. A lot of times, though, we just provide a listening ear, and we surround them with people who get it, who understand that's incredibly difficult. And so if they fall asleep on a table while they're waiting for their laundry, we don't jar them awake. It's difficult because we also don't want to be a place where people just camp out all day. But at the same time, if you so much as give someone a soft chair when there's literally no soft place for them to sit or be most of their lives, they're going to fall asleep. They're exhausted. And that also gets to some of the challenges with drugs and alcohol and addiction. again, it's hard to tell sometimes whether those are the issues that got people on the streets or whether they developed that as a coping mechanism because of life on the streets.
So at Turning Point, the idea is that people can come in and they can look for sort of ways to move themselves forward and out of homelessness.
Correct. So when we started, we really wanted to create an atmosphere that is not just about staying in your situation, but but the whole Turning Point name and logo and ethos is around how can we support one another in really changing our own outlook on life? Because I think that's more critical than a lot of things. It's hard to get a job if you just really have bought into the idea that you're not worth anything and that you don't have anything to offer. And we see that as a mutual transformation. So it's true for many of the folks that we work with who have experienced homelessness. We've also found that our sort of more traditional middle class volunteers have really experienced a turning point in their own lives in working with these folks, a much deeper understanding of their own frailties, the gifts of those who live in poverty, and they've really come face to face with some of their prejudices and expectations around people. So that's a key component to what we do, is just tear down walls and build bridges between people.
And what do people need to move from homelessness to having a home? And do those resources exist in Colombia?
Well, the most obvious need is a house.
Right.
Which a lot of people kind of overlook, that simple fact, and something that they can afford. And honestly, that is not very available in Colombia.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you my magic wand, unlimited budget question. If you had a magic wand and an unlimited budget, what would you do in Colombia to really end or minimize homelessness?
It would certainly be, well, okay, so my dream would be that there would be an area, and I can even see where it would be, with probably a combination of tiny houses and maybe an apartment building that would actually be mixed income and a center, a community center of some sort that would provide transitional employment opportunities. So training for people in some sort of micro enterprises, a shop for upholstery work, shoe repair, some just technical kind of skills that are needed. And then food service or those kinds of things. The challenge is that most of the people we work with have a rough work history, and so the only kind of jobs that they usually get pay minimum wage or less, which is still not a living wage. So they're still on the street or couch surfing or living in a car. So it's kind of a combination of that, the need for housing, but also the need for more stable employment that actually pays a living wage.
And in terms of North Village, I know that the city had bought the lot that was going to be sort of a comprehensive day center, and then it just seemed like all this pressure came to bear on that neighborhood, where I actually rent right now.
Okay.
And then the neighborhood just sort of said, no, no more.
Right.
Do you think there is a lot of pressure on that neighborhood?
Oh, I think there's a huge amount of pressure on that neighborhood. And I think it's one of the gifts of that neighborhood is that it's really been incredibly welcoming and supportive, and I think it has the potential to be the sort of neighborhood that I was talking about. The challenge is that without some, quite frankly, wealthier people who have more power in the community, the neighbors know who the drug dealers are. And so if those dealers were trying to live in a wealthier neighborhood, then they would be out. There would not be any lingering question. And yet, in a lower income, mixed income neighborhood, those people, for whatever reason, seem to last a lot longer. And when we're providing services, it's like shooting fish in a barrel because you know where vulnerable people are. And so those who want to prey on those vulnerable people know where to find them. Mm-hmm. So they just drive by and, you know, if they catch them in a weak moment, all of a sudden you're getting high because you're just tired of the whole thing and you can forget about it for a half hour and maybe survive another day. So that neighborhood has been incredibly welcoming, and as the population of Colombia grows, and with that inevitably comes an increase in the low-income population. You don't get to just pick and choose who comes to town. There's a huge amount of pressure on that neighborhood because so many other neighborhoods have just said, absolutely not, you know, the whole not in my backyard thing. Honestly, I totally get the backlash and I'm kind of supportive of it because I think it is time for other neighborhoods to step up. And you can't ignore, people don't go away just because you don't like them. We all have a right to exist, like it or not. And I think Columbia as a whole could do a much better job of building mixed income neighborhoods rather than continuing the isolation and segregation that happens based on class.
And do you think that there's an energy and a plan in the community of people who are working to address homelessness now? Like, what's going to happen in the next year? Is there a plan?
That's actually really been exciting, honestly. There is a group, the Functional Zero Task Force, has been coming together at the inspiration and huge amount of work from the VA. Katie Burnham Wilkins in particular is just a rock star. She has seen it work in other communities and so kind of took the leadership on bringing the concept to Columbia. And so we have people at the table. And it's not just the low income. It's not those, not only those who work with people who are experiencing homelessness, but also has to be people who have some housing mm-hmm. available and some shelter available and some resources available. So we can all sit down together and say, we're tired of seeing the same people every year at Project Homeless Connect and the same people at Turning Point all the time. So what do we know about their stories and how can we work together to really get this person off of the streets? Folks who are newer to experiencing homelessness, at least for some amount of time, they have a sense of dignity and hope because they haven't been completely squashed yet. People who've been on the streets for any period of time really just are overwhelmed with a sense of hopelessness, and they've tried and failed, and that failure sticks with them and begins to define them. And so those are the folks that if we can surround and really come up with a plan. And so Functional Zero is working to say, let's prioritize those people who are most at risk and really are to the point where their coping mechanisms are not maybe what they once were, and they need some support. They need to be prioritized before they die on the streets. And so what can we bring to bear? So that's been really exciting to see that move forward. And then with the new veterans complex, that's huge, provides a lot more resources. And so I do think we're getting a lot better. And we're getting better at naming the issue as something that Columbia really needs to deal with. And that in itself gets us closer to having a plan because there's more interest in actually making something happen. For a number of years, we did a whole lot of talking and it was really hard to get things off the ground. So it's really encouraging now to see some of the momentum we have.
That was Pastor Meg Hegman of Wilkes Boulevard United Methodist Church in North Central Columbia. Meg will soon be taking a leave from Wilkes, but Turning Point will continue. While visiting Turning Point, I met Sid and Patricia Howard. They volunteer at Turning Point today, but not too long ago, they came to Turning Point because they needed its services. Here are Sid and Patricia Howard.
We was homeless, staying at the room at the inn, and we knew Fishers and Lowe's was downstairs, but we didn't know nothing about Turning Point at the time. So we just started coming up here every day, and the old manager, Jesse, he retired now. He needed some help, so I volunteered. And then my wife volunteered, and we've been here ever since. This was 2014. So we just been here and helping out, found out how the things run, and we've been doing it ever since, helping people. You come here, take a shower, wash your clothes, store your clothes, and helping everybody. Is like a big family here. So we just everybody helps each other, if it's possible. So basically that's what we've been doing ever since 2014, and ever since. Now me and her are management upstairs, and we love it, enjoy doing it.
And I think a lot of people think that homelessness is something that couldn't happen to them, right?
I thought the same thing. Like the house that we stayed in, the landlord sold it. And our rent was pretty cool with him. And then when a new person bought the house, they upped the rent. Then stuff just started happening. I still having health problems. His job moved out of Columbia. I never thought I would be homeless. And then when it happened to me, we didn't know what to do. For real, we didn't know nothing about Turning Point, none of that. And people kept saying, you can go take a shower and stuff. I'm like, are you serious? Because I was kind of scared at first, you know, because being homeless is no joke. And everybody that's homeless, we weren't homeless because of drugs, like people's thing. Or we just made bad decisions with our money, like people's thing. It's just stuff happens. Never thought in a million years I would be homeless, I mean.
You were talking about how good it feels to see people come in and they're just coming to visit. They have a place now. Tell me a little bit more about how people sort of change when they're able to have a job and their own place and what you see in them.
They just feel good about themselves. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Then they come back up and then they want to volunteer and they want to help people. We have a client that has two jobs and stuff. And like she said, if it wasn't for Turning Point, she wouldn't know what to do. And now she just comes back and they want to give back. They really want to give back to the community and it makes them feel so wonderful about themselves. And I just love, love, love when we get success stories. Mm-hmm. It just makes me feel warm on the inside. And then they always say, girl, we got this, we got this, we got a place, we got a car and stuff. I'm like, go, girl, because that's what Turning Point is about. We always tell them, never give up. Never just settle.
It's a good thing when you know that you didn't help somebody and then mm-hmm. they went out. We helped find them a job, helped find them an apartment, helped get them first and last month's rent, you know, and they stick to it, you know. And once they done got into their job, into their own place, it makes them feel human again.
Yeah, human.
You know, and that makes us feel good because we have something to do with it. And they come, like she said, they come back, they share their story with other people that's upstairs. And once people see this and they say, man, I want that, I say, you can have that. Mm-hmm. Only thing I do is just put your
best foot forward.
Right.
Yeah.
Do the best you can to get to do this. Find a job first. Once you get that job, everything will fall into place. Guaranteed.
You know, we always ask, all of us, we are a big family. Have you seen son? No, I'm going to go look for him. And that makes them feel special. It made me feel special.
Just to know that somebody cares.
Yes. If I die today or tomorrow, somebody care. Mm-hmm. I used to feel like if I die today or tomorrow, ain't nobody going to care when I was homeless. But up here, I'm like, if I die today or tomorrow, somebody care. Right. If I turn up missing, somebody care. And that's the way we make them feel, because a lot of them do not have family. So I tell them, we your family now.
Thanks to Sid and Patricia Howard, who volunteer at Turning Point. Thank you for spending your time with us here at Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I want to thank our guests, Nick Foster of the Voluntary Action Center, Meg Hegeman of Wilkes Boulevard United Methodist Church, and Turning Point volunteers Sid and Patricia Howard. Our music is Montana Skies. This is the second of two shows we've produced on the issue of homelessness in Columbia. And you can listen to them both on Intersection's show page at kbia.org. You can also like us on Facebook. Intersection will be taking a summer hiatus following this week's broadcast, and we will return in September with more conversations in our community. Until then, have a wonderful and conversation-filled summer. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection on KBIA 91.3 FM.